Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Discover a healthcare team that's always here for you at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Email todaycb at rte.ie.
Did you see the recent picture of Pope Francis looking very gangster in a puffer jacket? The image of the pontiff wearing an ankle-length, belted white puffer coat was later revealed to be fake and was generated by an artificial intelligence image generator. As we learn more and more about the power of AI systems and its potential to cause disruption, questions arise about who owns creative material generated by machines. Barry Scannell, senior solicitor with William Fry, joins me in studio now to tell us a little bit more about the copyright quandaries that this new technology is causing. Were you taken in by Puffer Pope?
Oh, absolutely I was, but I guess I wasn't.
I'm putting my hand up to it as well, just in case you're embarrassed.
Well, no, I mean, they're quite stylish in the Vatican. So I just thought the Pope is an elderly man. He might have been saying mass outside. He needs a warm coat. And that did look like something that might have been designed. And I think that actually gives you an indication of how easy it is to fall foul of artificially generated images, because, you know, context is really important. And you can use your cap on when you see an image like that and say, OK, well, that, you know, there's nothing stands out for me there. But then, what about other potential harmful images, like with politicians? You could have a politician shaking hands with a terrorist. Or I know that there's videos circulating online, for example, with President Zelensky in Ukraine that are altered using AI with, for propaganda reasons that are potentially harmful. So, we're in that brave new world now.
To the uninitiated, can you explain, please, how images like this are generated?
So, I would say basically, but it's quite complicated, but simplifying it as far as possible, the AIs are trained on billions and billions of images. For example, one of the more well-known AI models is trained on a data set called Lion 5B. So a data set basically is just this massive tranche of data from which the AI learns. So the Lion data set is made up of nearly 6 billion text to image pairs. So the way that was created is that these bots went through the archive of the internet called the Common Crawl going back to 2008, and they pulled out all the images that were associated with text. So if it pulled a picture of a cat, and if the picture of a cat was associated with the word cat, then you had
that it was captioned or explained in some way, yeah?
So you had a text to image pair. So Lion is made of text-to-image pairs like that. So kind of like when a child is learning its first words, there's a picture of an apple and underneath is the word apple. The AI learns to associate images with those words.
Okay, so very crudely put, I could say, AutoGPT, I would like to create an image of Barry Scannell sitting in an RT radio studio. It will go and get the images of those two things and marry them.
Yeah, so, you know, if it was a celebrity, it would. I don't think I'm quite well known.
But there are images of Barry Scannell out there, of course.
But it wouldn't be able to do that quite yet. But if you said Taylor Swift sitting in, you know, where there's more images, like there's millions of images of her, say, then it would be...
Nobody would ever believe that Taylor Swift would be sitting in an RT Radio 1 studio. Okay. Let's move on then, actually, now that you mentioned Taylor Swift, to music and how AI is doing the same thing there. Again, is he scraping and trawling through the library of music that's online?
Well, that is a potential issue. So Google developed a music generating AI called MusicLM, and it was developed using 280,000 hours of music. And they haven't released that yet, because one of the problems they're encountering with the AI is that when it's recreating musical output, it actually inadvertently creates music that's substantially similar to the music on which it was trained.
Which does too good a job of sounding like.
Yeah, exactly, which would create infringement issues and copyright issues. So it's effectively the same way. So there's the example, one of the early examples was about back in 2016, and it was when my attention started to be drawn to this issue, and I was originally in the music industry looking at these issues, was Sony and Sony's AI company, Sony Flow Machines, developed a Beatles song called Daddy's Car. And any of your listeners can go onto YouTube and YouTube Daddy's Car for this early rendition of an AI piece of music. And they trained it on 44 Beatles songs. Now, it sounds quite like the Beatles, not great. Maybe it was something Ringo Starr could have written, but
ooh, harsh.
But it definitely has that Beatles vibe to it. And another way that music can be trained on AI systems is that they'll convert the sound into something called a spectrogram, which is basically a visual representation of a piece of music. And then the AI, in much the same way it analyzes pictures, analyzes the music in the same way to identify the patterns it needs.
Okay. Now, the obvious problem here then is who ends up owning this music? Is it solely, exclusively, and beneficially the copyright of the people who created this artificial intelligence that did this in the first place? Or could I, as Taylor Swift or even Ringo Starr, make an argument that, well, hang on a second, this AI generator learned from my music, took its inspiration from my music, or indeed plagiarized elements of it. I want a cut of this, please.
So that's the real pressing question. And the court cases that have been launched in relation to it have only really been launched in the last few months since the start of the year. When copyright law was first created, nobody ever envisaged a machine being able to create anything. And it was always human-centric. So if you look at most jurisdictions, only a human can create copyright works. Now, Ireland is actually an outlier, and the UK, because we copied the UK copyright legislation when we brought in ours. And we actually allow in Ireland for copyright ownership of computer-generated works by the person who made the arrangements to create the works. However, recently in the United States, the US Copyright Office issued a decision. Now, in the US, they need registrations for copyright. We don't do that in Ireland. But an artist, Krish Kashtanova, she sought to register the copyright in a graphic novel, a comic book. And the thing is that she used AI to create the images in the comic. Now, the thing.
So she wrote the story, but the graphics of the graphic novel were created by a computer.
Based on her prompts, yes. So she'd say, you know, generate an image of for a graphic novel of a girl looking into the distance.
And she was trying to claim the work as 100% entirely hers and cut the computer out of the proceeds, so to speak.
Exactly. So what the Copyright Office in the United States said, that the graphic novel itself is fully protected by copyright. But in terms of the individual images that were generated using AI, those individual images are not subject to copyright registrations. So that means that she owns the copyright in the graphic novel, okay, but the individual images themselves won't be. And that
so it would not be a copyright infringement then for me to take each individual page of her graphic novel and reproduce it without permission?
Yeah, that's the way it's looking like it might go in the United States.
This is getting very, very messy, isn't it?
Yeah. And you see, the problem is it'll have to be decided on a case-by-case basis because, you know, taking the European approach, the way the European courts look at it is it original in the sense that it's the author's own creation? Does it reflect the author's personality? And was the author able to make free and creative choices? And that's what European courts look like. But the only way you're going to be able to identify whether or not enough human input went into an AI creation will be on a case-by-case basis. So I was reading a report last night, actually, said that in 2022, there was 110 AI-related court cases in the United States, but there's three big ones relating to AI infringement.
Now, Taylor Swift is not really the problem here, nor Ringo Starr, because you would imagine that for the moment anyway, there is going to continue to be a market for what it is that they uniquely themselves produce without the assistance of a computer. The problem comes a little bit lower down the food chain, doesn't it, with music used in corporate videos, music used in ads, that original composition is going to be less and less valued there, and the people at that end of the industry are presumably going to start losing out.
And this is a problem that isn't unique to the music industry, and you're absolutely right. And, you know, when it comes to things like, you know, music used, as you've outlined there, when it comes to things like stock photography, You know, that's all going to be problematic facing AI. But the way AI is impacting the jobs market full stop is that you're going to have a situation where you won't necessarily be replaced by AI, but you will be replaced by other people who use AI. So it might be the case that composers, for example, are able to generate a lot more music using AI systems and AI helpers, basically. But it is certainly something that the music industry as a whole is looking at very closely because it is very impactful.
Indeed. I mean, I can see already how it would be so much easier for me as a program maker to be able to say, computer, generate me moody background music for a documentary on X, Y, or Z subject, please, in the style of so-and-so, rather than having to go and pay the 1,000 or the 2,000 euro, the small money that keeps artists, keeps musicians actually alive.
Yeah, and that technology exists. I mean, I'm aware of a number of websites where you can go to and you might pay a euro to get that jingle, you know, for the start of a podcast or something, or if you're doing a documentary. That technology actually exists, and as it becomes more prevalent in the public consciousness, it's going to have more and more of an impact.
Indeed, the genie is out of the bottle here, isn't it? I mean, we could legislate for this, but you can't really push technology like this underground if it already exists. People are going to start keep on using it.
No, absolutely. And you would have seen recently that Elon Musk and a number of other prominent characters in tech called for a pause on AI development. But I think, you know, AI development is so inevitable. You might as well go out to the beach with a sweeping brush and try and brush back the tide. I mean, there's, as you say, no putting the genie back in the bottle.
So how are you in the legal profession preparing for this?
I think a huge part of it is the educational part of making sure that our clients are aware of what their legal obligations and implications are. So, you know, it's not just copyright, and we are doing a lot of work in the copyright area, and especially with the music industry on the area, but there's really big data protection implications as well, for example.
How so?
Well, the EU AI Act is going to be probably voted on at the end of this month by the European Parliament, and it'll probably be law by the end of the year, and there'll be a transition phase, and that's going to bring big regulatory obligations for high-risk AI systems. But that's a topic for another day. But in terms of what applies now, under GDPR, there are specific rules around data processing, around automated decision-making, around your legal basis for processing data, and you'll have seen recently, last week actually, that the Italian data protection regulator has actually banned ChatGPT in Italy because of privacy concerns, because of underage users using it, because of its legal basis for processing the data. And
but good luck trying to enforce a ban like that, frankly.
It's been enforced, and the data protection regulators around Europe have that power under the GDPR, and ChatGPT is now not available.
But I'm sorry, if I'm sitting in Rome, I can get on a virtual private network and I can go to the ChatGPT site and I can continue to do whatever, and the data protection commissioner in Italy is never going to know about that.
Well, the thing about that is that if you're a company and you're doing that in Italy, you're in breach of your regulatory obligations. And there's lots of things that companies can do in breach of their regulatory obligations, and maybe they'll get caught and maybe they won't.
Okay, well, there's one thing that's very obvious, Barry, is that this is a boon time for lawyers working in the copyright area.
Well, it's at the very beginning of it, to be honest with you, Philip, and it's really going to explode. And I really do think it's going to become one of the most important areas of law, especially over the next 10 years.
Barry Scannell, Senior Solicitor with William Fry, thank you very much for joining us this morning. Coming up, what sports and exercise can transition with us as we age?
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.